Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome back to the show. My name is Dan Hafner. For those of you rejoining the show, welcome back. If you've never listened to an episode, welcome. This is some technology stuff for you, some business, marketing, personal development. We got it all here, man. It's good times. And today I'm going to be introducing a new friend of mine named Daryl Stevens. Has a really cool platform I want to talk about and dive down. It's a really interesting kind of story. So we'll get to him in a second. But as I always like to start, wherever you're watching the show, wherever you're listening to the show, please take a couple seconds to either like it, rate it, review it, thumbs up, whatever the heck is there, whether you're on Spotify, YouTube, wherever you are. That really, really helps the show. We really appreciate any reviews, any ratings. That helps us grow, you know, helps it get out to more people, everything like that. So wherever you're listening, please take the time to do that. And we really, really appreciate it. So with that being said, welcome to the show, Daryl Stevens. He is the founder of this platform called Base Parlor. It's really, really interesting. I won't take a lot of the thunder from it. I'll let Daryl talk about it, but it's a music sharing marketplace. They can go live now. They can do all kinds of cool stuff. So welcome to the show, Daryl. How you doing, man?
Doing good, man. I appreciate the invite, Dan. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. And for those of you watching, he's got some pretty sweet swag, man. Like the whole brand, it's just awesome, man. I love it. So what the heck is Base Parlor, man? Tell us about it.
Yeah, Base Parlor. So Base Parlor, we're an app. We're an app for musicians, specifically for indie musicians, right? So a lot of times, independent musicians, they don't have the network, or sometimes they don't have the funds to that, you know, that the major record labels do, the major musicians do. So what we did is we created an app that allows independent musicians around the world to connect with each other, to find each other, to collaborate. And now we're releasing what we call Parlors Live, which is a feature that allows, you know, you to create your own room. You can invite other musicians into your room. In that room, you have a live feed. You can have your own workshops, your own tutorials, music discussions, interviews with other musicians. So it's really just a community, really, a music community, a musician community that allows us to build, to grow, to build networks and find collaborators. Because ultimately the goal is to find collaborators to create great music with, you know?
Yeah, no, it sounds awesome, man. So, I mean, did you have a background in this? How did you even get this idea in the first place?
Yeah, man, so a long story. So I actually started out as an athlete. I was a college baseball player. And
where'd
so
you play?
I played baseball, center field.
Where did you play?
Oh, UCF. So I played 3 years at University of Central Florida, transferred to Georgia Southern my senior year in sports. Okay. And so, you know, I finished up the degree at Georgia State, but as far as playing baseball, UCF and then Georgia Southern.
Nice.
And then, you know, got drafted out of high school, assumed I was going to get drafted out of college, didn't get drafted out of college, and then I had to have something to kind of take that place of sports because I was really competitive. I was always a music person, really, you know, so we grew up in a neighborhood in Atlanta. There's a lot of us always growing up playing baseball, basketball in the street, football in the street. This a whole bunch of, you know, different sports and riding our bikes, just having a good time. I was always the one that used to bring the music. So I did a soundtrack for a whole childhood, basically. And so this being a music person, so once sports was out, I really dived deep into music production. So once I finished undergrad, I went to Orlando, moved to Orlando, or back to Orlando, because I went there for UCF. Went to a school there called Full Sail, learned like audio engineering, music production. Ended up getting a job at EA Sports, and then worked on some of their Madden games, doing sound effects, music, sound effects, sound design.
Nice.
And then, you know, on the side, doing audio engineering, doing, you know, some music production for some local artists there in Orlando. And, you know, as a producer, you know, I had, you know, this is back in the mid-2000s, late 2000s. So, you know, I was using some software, but I was really into the hardware stuff, MPCs, you know, keyboards and all that kind of stuff. So was really big in production, but decided to go back to school and get a master's and move to D.C. When I was up there, that's when I started seeing these WeWorks pop up all over the place. And I was like, that's an incredible idea, but I wanted to do a switch, like a little twist on it, which was starting a WeWork, but just for musicians. And so that way you're going to have like different stations set up. And at each station, you have like a different artist, a different producer, and, you know, they can work by themselves if they want to, or with, you know, with their partner. But also they're around other musicians. So that's one thing that, you know, kind of You know, I love when I was doing music production, I love doing it, but sometimes it's kind of siloed out. You know, you're in your own room making beats or, you know, making your own thing. So it can be sometimes kind of lonely a little bit. So I want to create something that got away from that feel of like, okay, I'm here by myself doing it, like a mad scientist in your basement, you know? And so built that up, started doing a lot of different music showcases in DC, started doing some different music showcases in Atlanta as well. Got a lot of great feedback from, you know, from the musicians in the area, some of the local musicians in Atlanta and DC, and decided to start my own studio / shared workspace called Bass Parlor Studios. So, you know, moved back to Atlanta, started Bass Parlor Studios, and we started like building a lot of momentum. And basically, you know, one of the big things that we started throwing every single month was this thing we call the Bass Parlor Mashup. And what the Bass Parlor Mashup was, we just invited a lot of musicians from around the city. We would have like 50 different musicians, never met each other before. They'd come out and me and my team would just randomly pair them up. Like, okay, you and you. And like, so you would have maybe like 20 different teams. And each team we gave like an hour and a half to create a brand new song. So they'll create a brand new slam, that 90-minute block to create something, and then they get up there and perform it in front of everybody else.
Wow.
And so that started getting a lot of momentum too. We started getting sponsorships from like Samsung and some other places. And so it really got good. But then COVID hit. And when COVID hit, we were like, oh, we're just getting going, just getting things moving. But I saw the real need for musicians to be able to find a place where they can build that network. And they, you know, they love to collaborate. Love to, you know, find new people to work with, love to learn from each other and stuff like that. But there weren't really many places to do that. And now that COVID hit, there's even more of a need to do that. Because, you know, I didn't know it was going to be as long as it was, but I knew it was going to be pretty significant. So we kind of pivoted the whole thing. We shut down the physical location of the studio and we launched a Bass Parlor app. So it took, you know, about eight, nine months to build it. And then we launched it in 2021, like January 2021. Doing a lot of the same things that we were doing in the studio, but now we can do it on the app. So instead of reaching just, you know, musicians in Atlanta and the greater Atlanta area and maybe some of the surrounding states, now we can reach a global market of musicians and build a global community. So that's pretty much the origin story.
Wow, that's really good. So it took, what I was going to ask was how long did it take? So did you guys like hire a whole team? Did you build it yourself? What did you do?
Yeah, so we outsourced it. So we hired a team to build it. I knew what I wanted to look like, so I designed it. Like, so, you know, between sketches and using Canva and all these different kind of tools, I sketched what I wanted to look like, but I'm not a coder, you know, I'm not a developer. So what I did was I hired a development team to actually develop the app. And then from there, you know, I just started building, you know, adding things onto it that I wanted to see. And then getting feedback, like one of the big things we do is we get feedback from the community. So, you know, that's the biggest thing, because you can think that's something to work, but you need, what I've learned is this, to get feedback from the musicians who actually use it.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those of you that are watching either on Spotify or YouTube or anything, I'm sharing the website for it. Looks really good. Looks really awesome. And it's really neat. So, I mean, you got a couple of things on here. Like it looks like there's contests and mashups and
right.
All kinds of like fun stuff here. So
absolutely. Yeah, we have a monthly contest. So one thing we do is we have a monthly music contest. So any two musicians on the app can pair up, create a song, upload that song into our contest, and whoever wins, you know, whoever gets the most votes, and anybody can vote. You don't have to be a musician to vote. Anybody can vote on the song they like the best. Whoever gets the most votes wins the prize for that month.
So it's just like what you were doing in person. You just made it in a digital form.
Exactly.
That's so cool, man. That's what's so beautiful about apps and software and technology and this kind of stuff, is you can literally take things that are existing in the real world and you can make them. I mean, it's not that they're an equivalent or it's just as good, or like, I'm sure those things that you were doing in person were freaking awesome, you know? Right. But it's like you said, you can reach a wider audience and you can kind of bring the same type of experience to that, to that market. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And that's our goal, is it? Because it's hard to replace in person. There's really nothing to replace in person, but we want to try to get as close to that as possible. And then, you know, spread. And the benefit of that also, like you said, is a global market. So in person has its limitations. There's nothing like being in person, but also has its limitations as far as like what your reach, you know what I mean? So, you know, we try to bring that, the reach from, you know, being in an app, with that person to person feel of being in person as best we can.
Wow. Is this the first business you ever started?
No, actually, I started a business a long time ago. So I left EA Sports to start a business. It was an apparel company. And so it was focused in youth sports. And so started that in Atlanta where me and my best friend, we started this business where, you know, we had, you know, he was pretty good at photography. So basically we'd take a lot of action shots, and it was clothes for parents to wear to at their kids' sports games. And so we made a lot of mistakes, but those mistakes is between the mistakes we made and some of the things I feel like I can improve on. That's the reason I went back to get an MBA. And also just learning from those mistakes helped me a lot starting this business, you know, because it was so many small things and big things that I would have done different if I had to do it again. But sometimes you got to go through that to know what you did wrong, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And if you guys are watching or listening, you want to actually check out the app. It's Bass, Bass, and then Parlour, Parlour. And you can download it on Google Play or the App Store. And we'll put the links for it in the show notes. But yeah, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, it's, you know, I think we can talk about, you know, the entrepreneurship journey and all this different stuff, but that's a cool story of how you kind of, I can see how you got here. You know what I mean? Right. Like that's right. Really cool. That's really cool. So have you ever gotten any, like, you ever gotten any funding, or did you raise anything for this at all?
Not yet. Not yet. Wow. I haven't raised anything. I haven't really aimed to raise anything yet. I wanted to, what I want to do is I might do crowdfunding because I have a very specific market I want to reach. And, you know, a lot of investors, I've talked to a lot of investors, and I've gone to some different pitch competitions and have, like, you know, I would say, like, this conversations with investors, not they want to invest in me necessarily, but just conversations. And a lot of them aren't necessarily music people, you know? And so one of the fears I would have is getting an investor and going in a direction that I know wouldn't be the right direction. But, you know, it might be the right direction monetarily, but as far as culture-wise, it wouldn't be the right direction for what I want to do. So I'm really, me and my team are thinking hard about crowdfunding, going the crowdfunding route. So that way, you know, we're being supported and invested in by other musicians and other, you know, music lovers.
Yeah. Interesting. You know, I'll actually have to, I have a guest coming on here in a few shows from now. I'll have to hook you up with, cause I think you might be able to benefit from something like that. It's not, I won't spoil it for everyone, but I'll definitely hook you up.
Okay. I appreciate that.
But, so where is this platform at? Like, in terms of, do you have any, like, numbers, you know, reach, like, you know, any stats you can share or anything? I mean, you don't have to if you don't want to, but
yeah, sure. So we launched in January 2021. We now have around 2,500 or so musicians on, mostly, you know, all around mostly the United States, but we're starting to see a big blips in other countries. Like, we have a lot of West Africans, like people from Ghana, Nigeria, a lot of people from Europe. We're starting to see a lot of Eastern Europeans coming on the app. And so it's starting to have a more of a spread. We're starting to see some Asian countries, some Southeast Asian countries. So it's like, but in all, right, we have around 2,500 musicians on it. We're growing like very, very fast, really fast. But I would say around 80% or so are United States musicians, but we're still growing that.
Wow. Good for you guys. Good for you, man. All right. Well, let's dive into some of the not so fun stuff now.
Okay.
So what was the biggest challenge of, I mean, obviously you had the COVID challenge of actually like being shut down physically and then building this, but I'm talking like just specifically inside of building the Bass Parlour app, like the software, the platform, the community. What was the hardest thing about that?
Well, two things. One is finding the right tech team, and two would be marketing on a budget. Those are two of the biggest, mm-hmm. Two of the biggest things. So find the right tech team. Our initial tech team, they did a good job. I would compare them to like a high school coach, right? So they did a good job getting us started, but they didn't have the capability to go where I knew I wanted to go with it. So when I left them to go to another tech team, you know, they talked a good game, but they weren't, you know, they weren't cutting the mustard like I thought they were. And so, you know, from interviewing, it must have been around six or seven different tech firms or development firms. You know, I chose them, and they really set me back like a full year. Like, honestly, wow. Like pretty much the entire 2022, I was completely set back. And it was it was crushing, you know, because I had gained so much momentum in 2021. I knew where I wanted to go. I brought on this tech team, and, you know, outsourcing has its headaches. You know, it can be like, you know, everybody said, everybody I speak with says, you know, you want to have an in-house tech team, but that's extremely expensive, you know? Yeah. So without venture capital money to fund that, you know, it would be hard. So my choice was to outsource it. So once I left them, I'm with the tech team I'm with now. I found them actually through referral. And that's the best thing I can say is, like, outside of your own interviews, you want to do your own due diligence, but also someone who's worked with them before. That says a lot. So I chose, you know, they interviewed great, but also I had like two or three people I knew that worked with them before. And I was like, okay, cool. So they vouched for them and I went with them, and it's been great ever since. It's been really, really good ever since. So that was one huge frustration that set me back. The other one's marketing. So we're marketing on a tight budget. And so what we do to try to separate ourselves, we do a lot of events in the community. So like what we had for studio, and then we work, you know, we rely a lot on word of mouth from those events. And then also from a YouTube show. So we try to have like these small impactful events. And so the ground zero is here in Atlanta, or maybe the Southeast, and then it spreads out from there, you know? So we have a lot of different things in the community. We will have like free showcases for musicians. We have a YouTube show where, like, pretty much the YouTube version of what I was telling you about. We're taking two musicians who've never, you know, worked with each other before. They create a song, they have an hour to create a song. It's called a Bass Parlor Mashup on YouTube. So from different things like that, you know, the word of mouth spreads really, really quickly. So, you know, we don't have a whole lot of money to compete with some of the major competitors that we have. But we can do it, make a huge impact in a small area and have that spread out.
That's that's interesting. At the time of recording this, this will probably be released after the fact, but at the time of recording this, I'm going out to a client of mine's launch. We actually built their app and they're launching it at a convention.
Okay.
And I'm really interested to see how all that goes. So I mean, do you find that it's those types of tactics, like everyone gets all, you know, all excited about Facebook ads or Google ads or like running those types of things. But do you find that like boots on the ground, you know, what call it guerrilla marketing, call it whatever you want to, like, you know, whatever in person type things. Do you find that has a bigger effect, or like you said, a network word of mouth effect, or is it harder to do?
It's both. I think it has a bigger effect when it comes to word of mouth. It doesn't have the reach because you can't reach as many people, but it has the people that you do reach has a bigger impact, and it's more likely that they'll tell other people. Because like I also, in addition to that, you know, I do Instagram ads, I do Facebook ads, I do, you know, I do all that as well. I can't put as much money into it as other larger brands can, but I do some of that. But I have to supplement that with our in-person type stuff. And so what I found is that the reach is a lot, you know, so you know how Facebook and Instagram ads, you can say where you want it to hit, who you want it to hit, what geographical area. So yeah, that's extremely necessary. But when they see it, they're inundated with all kinds of ads. So they're not really gonna usually tell any, unless it's super impactful, tell that many people. But if they go to an event in person, a base product, and they go, oh, you gotta come to this event next time they have it. Like, it's the word of mouth spreads like that. And especially nowadays when people, there's not as much face-to-face interaction as there was in the past, you know, I would say even pre-COVID. So those kind of things seem to, from my observation and from my team's observation, have stuck out more. But I do supplement that also with, you know, the Instagram ads and all that kind of stuff, because you can't replace that kind of reach, you know?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. That's a good answer. I appreciate that. So yeah, I'm interested, and I'm doing my own thing here with my own conference-based launch of things like that too. So,
right.
So that's exciting. That's cool. Cause it's just a different way of grabbing attention and doing different things. You know what I mean? So very cool.
Right. And a lot of this is trial and error too. You know, a lot of it's like, oh, this could be a cool idea. Let me just try this out. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Even when it comes to like ads, you know, even when it comes to making ads, what I found too with ads is people want to see other people. So I started having more like face-to-face, like videos of people enjoying things, like anything that involves interaction is what I've really focused on now with ads, rather than just features and showing the app or whatever, like actual interaction or testimonials really goes a long way is what I found.
Interesting. Yeah, that's good. That's good information. So, well, let me ask you this too. You know, if I think we already know like the development mishaps and all that different stuff that kind of went on. So maybe it's the same answer, but you know, if you could go back, you know, COVID just shut you guys down in, you know, 2020. Mm-hmm. You know, you're pivoting to this, you're doing this new platform. If you could go back, knowing what you know now,
right,
what would you do anything different? What one thing would you do different if you would?
Man, you know what I would have done? Instead of opening the studio, I would have continued to have my one-off. I mean, now is a huge thing because now I know that COVID happened. So that changes everything. But knowing that COVID happened, you know, I went from throwing events, you know, partnering with an event venue or partnering with like a cafe. I partnered all different kinds of people, right? And throw an event at their place, right? And I went from that to having my own studio. Instead of that, I would continue to do my one-off events and go straight from that to an app and just bypass the whole studio part. Because knowing now, I would have had to shut it down due to COVID anyway. I could have saved some time. I could have saved some time. And then from there, I probably would have just gone from city to city throwing different, which, you know, we're doing now, go from city to city to throw, you know, different events at these different cities and accompany with that app, you know, instead of going through the, but on the yeah. bright side of that, I would say I would do that. But on the bright side of that, building that studio taught me so much. Taught me so much about running a business, running a physical location. It made me like a huge presence in the Atlanta independent musician market from that studio. So there was a lot of benefits from that I might not have gotten if I had gone straight to that. So it has its upside and downside, but if I had to pick one thing, I would say that's probably what it is.
No, that's good. You know, you, like you said, there's, you can look back and be like, man, shouldn't have done that. Maybe wasted time and money. But like you said, there was also benefits that came out of it too.
Right.
Interesting. Very interesting. Okay. So yeah, like what, have you ever had any like big success stories come out of Bass Parlor? Like anybody that just went like viral or anything like that? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I would say not. I have a lot of musicians on the app that, you know, that were started, like, for instance, they started during COVID, started getting bigger. Now they're huge. And, you know, some musicians on the app that have done that. None maybe that you recognize. If you're in Atlanta, definitely something that you would recognize here in Atlanta. Okay. There's a good guitarist here. What he did was pretty interesting. During COVID, he would go around the beltway in Atlanta, like this thing that connects different areas. And he went on his little scooter with his guitar, electric guitar, to start playing stuff. I actually interviewed him for our podcast. We started playing, and then, you know, people would see him and playing guitar. He would take electric guitar. He would take requests and everything like that. So now he's got, you know, probably, I think, a couple hundred thousand followers on Instagram. He's become like a really, really big deal here locally. Named Chavis Flag, Chavis Flag. So he's really good. You know, he's been a Bass Parlor supporter from very, very early on. We have a bass guitarist who went on tour with Summer Walker. I interviewed him for the Bass Parlor. He's a big Bass Parlor supporter from early on. So he used to come to the studio a lot. And he's, you know, he was actually on the Tiny Desk series with Summer Walker. So yeah, we have a lot of people who are doing some things in the local community. So we have some pretty good people. And then like people like that are, you know, great for our new partners live to teach their own sessions, to join other people's sessions and just add to the conversation. So that's what we're working on.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay. So what do you think, you know, someone with some industry experience in the music industry, obviously, I love getting to this question at the end with everyone, you know, the big, bad, ugly AI type of conversation, you know, like what do you think? I mean, I haven't actually I've talked to people, you know, like, how is it going to affect your industry, this industry, that I haven't really talked to anybody about the music stuff. We just talked to somebody about the movie industry. Okay. But with music, like, how is it, what's going on with AI and music? Is it like ruining stuff? Is it making stuff better? What's going on with the music industry?
Yeah, it hasn't really fully hit yet. is a lot of things that will happen or that I think will happen or a lot of things that could happen. Like, it hasn't affected us as much as the movie industry yet. Some things I think it can go. Because, like, obviously, they have the Drake and Weeknd song that was released last year. And so, like, it was an AI Drake Weeknd song. It wasn't them. It was an AI, you know, imitation of them, basically. But the song ended up being a hit until they took it off. And so it can... if they don't handle it right, it could destroy the music industry as it currently is. I mean, you're always going to have music, obviously, and you're always going to have an industry somewhere, but you can, it can destroy its current state. But if they handle it right, I think it could be a great benefit and add other revenue streams to artists. Like, for instance, I think one thing that that will happen, and I think they should jump on it early, is that you can license your voice. So if you have an AI, that, let's just take The Weeknd again. Let's say The Weeknd, you know, AI can imitate his voice. He can license his voice, and then you can have a songwriter, or thousands of songwriters, whoever wants to come write a voice, release a song in the voice of The Weeknd, and then, you know, with that voice, you get he can get a cut out of whatever song is released in his voice, you know? And so you can have a business that's set up to just license AI imitation voices and then make sure that it's in, you know, that is in, I don't say in cahoots, but make sure they partner with the artist. So to make sure the artist gets a cut of whatever's released in that artist's voice, you know? So it's really going to, I think it can really bring to rise songwriters. A lot of songwriters going to have an opportunity to be a great songwriters who can't sing or can't rap or whatever it is, but can use someone else's voice with their lyrics that they write. And then they get a cut, the artist gets a cut. And then, you know, I think that's a, that's one way it can, that it can benefit everybody, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. Because, I mean, I remember, you know, I got to say, I'm not big into the music industry. I love music and stuff, but I'm not like, I don't follow it, you know, very closely or whatever. But I think, you know, like, I remember when they said, you know, like LimeWire, those types of things came out, and streaming came out. They were like, or like even, it was just, it was streaming music. They were like, this is going to ruin everything. And and sure enough, it's just really helped some people explode, like, like you said. And so, but then I also think about, you know, when I was a kid, I had a Walkman, you know what I mean? I would like be listening to CD players and stuff. And then you would buy the CD or whatever. And then you would actually, you would hear a music or a song where, you know, somebody ended up, they did a collab or like they were, you know, it was somebody that got featured and you were like, oh, I actually know that person or, you know, whatever it was. And that was almost like a really interesting, and for someone who like didn't follow, like I never like, you know, obsessively followed a lot of the people I was, you know, listening to or anything, but it was like, wow, they like, you know, they, there's two superstars that are combining for something. So it could it almost be like, could I write a song and then bring in like, you know, Luke Combs is my favorite guy. I'm a country fan, you know, could I like do a song if Luke Combs like licensed his voice, could he be like a guest star on my track? Could that happen?
Yeah, it could happen. And that's where I think it's going to go. That's where I think it's going to go is they can, you can have your own, you can write your own track, your own lyrics and everything like that. And then have that, even if you're a guitar player, have your own parts, and then have that voice on there. And, but there's no, right now there's no governing body to organize all that, you know? So there's no company to organize all that, but that's where I see like a Spotify version of AI that can organize that. And so they're getting the artist to get a cut. The songwriter gets a cut. The artist is obviously going to get a bigger cut than the songwriter, but you know, everybody gets, can get a little piece and of the creation, you know? So I can see that happening with AI, but on the downside, you know, if it's unregulated, kind of like how when LimeWire first came out and what was the other one? Azure, I used to download stuff in Napster, all that kind of stuff. So I was heavy into that. I know about all those different programs, but yeah, I think to beginning before it's organized, before you have some kind of organization or some kind of company to really make it all legal, I think it's going to be, it could be the Wild West for a while, where just people just releasing stuff all over the place and it gets taken down, and someone releasing another Drake song or Beyonce song that gets taken down, or you know, so it's going to be the Wild West for a second. But I think the music industry from this first iteration with streaming has gotten hip to it. I think it's going, it's not going to take as long this time for them to organize as it did last time.
No, that's a good analogy, the Wild West of stuff. Cause I mean, it's like, it really is when you think about it in a lot of ways, it really has unleashed this kind of Wild West of things.
Absolutely. Wow.
That's crazy. All right, well, we got a few more minutes. You know, what's one maybe piece of advice you would give someone, maybe a listener, maybe they've you know, wanted to start a, you know, a platform, had an idea for an app, or you know, they just have a hobby they want to turn into something. What's a piece of advice as someone who's gone through and actually built something, brought it to success, got community in there, gone through, you know, you have team now, you're growing it. You know, what's one piece of advice you'd leave someone with in that space?
I would say now, something that's that wasn't available to me then, that's available to a lot of people now, is those self, what they call that. You can build your own app by yourself, like very scaled down MVP version of an app. No code, that's what they call it. No man, code building tools.
That's what I do, man. Thanks for the plug. I appreciate it.
Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah. Yeah. So I wouldn't spend all that money on developers yet. I would test the idea first. I would get a no code, you know, develop it no code, even if it's like a scaled down, very ugly, nasty version of it. But at least you can get some feedback on it. You can get some interest. People can get on there and see. They can have a physical product. And I think that one thing that does is that gives you feedback from your users. I know, and this is true for not just apps, but just businesses, period. So your idea of what can work is a lot different than a lot of times what actually works or what actually people gravitate to. And you don't want to spend a whole bunch of money in something that you think can work without any kind of evidence. And, you know, at some point you do have to take some sort of a leap, but you want to make that leap as small, as short as possible, you know? So I think getting that feedback, building something very scaled down, getting that feedback from users and from like the first wave of users, from customers, from people. And then from there, as you start to grow, then you can start building onto that. And you can always, they have no code tools now that, you know, if you need to, you can transfer, you can take the code out of there and then put into, you know, another code builder, like, you know, what's native, what's that thing called? React Native or whatever, Flutter, whatever you want to do, you can take that code out. So you have a lot of different options on that end now that I didn't have back then. So I will start with that, but that's not just apps, it's anything. I think like there's a book that talks about that called Lean Startup. It's the same concept that I would take to any industry, which is like test the idea first.
Yeah.
That's a big thing I would say.
Did you guys do that with the Base Parlor app? Did you start it with a no code thing?
No, we didn't. I started with, it was almost a no code. They didn't have no code back then, but well, they might have. I didn't know about no code back then.
Yeah.
But we started with a web app. We started like a web version of the app, and it was really cheap. It was a really cheap version of it. I had someone build a web version. And so it essentially did the same thing. But some of the feedback I got from the web version is, you know, it's pretty cool concept. I like it, but I'm not going to go on a website to do it. I wanted to have it on my phone, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's a big thing that I got. So I had a different version of having that MVP, that scaled down version, but yeah, it wasn't a no code app version of it, which I would do now if I had to start from scratch.
Well, it's too bad you didn't know me, because I could have helped you out with it.
Yeah, but, man. Hey, yeah, man. About 3 years too late, man. Where were you, man?
I wasn't marketing the podcast as hard as I was, I guess. That's maybe where it was. I actually started in 2020 with all this too. Okay. So but no, that's really, you know, and that there's another piece of that too is, you know, you can do it as a web version instead of a native app, and it's not as super convenient, but you probably don't have to go through the approval process of Apple and Google and all that other stuff too. Yeah. So there are trade-offs. Yeah. Well, anyway, just like Daryl said, man, you guys want some no code stuff, Dan's your guy. I'll hook you up. Dan's don't worry.
That's what I'm going to send some people your way too, man. Cause I have some friends who, I know you do that, but I have some friends who have some app ideas, and that'd be perfect for them, you know?
Absolutely. It's such I'm a huge advocate for it. It's what Dapper Mobile Apps is. Okay. I don't really try to push it or advertise it a lot, but since we're talking about it, DapperMobileApps.com, man, that's where we'll get you hooked up. We do MVPs. We can do responsive stuff, all that stuff. It's really fun. I'm a huge fan of it. I started my very first running and fitness app doing no code. Okay. Never had a background in any of it, and kind of built an agency around it. So, yeah, man. So, but anyway, it's not about me. That was just a fun little segue into that. But yeah, you can check that out if you want. But I really recommend you guys check out baseparlorapp.com, right? It's baseparlorapp.com is the website. Right. And then you can download the app on the Apple or Google Play Store.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, man, this is really cool. This is really inspiring, really fun stuff. I'm excited to see where you guys take this next. And you know, if you feel free to share this anywhere, or you know, talk about this. I don't know if you've ever gone into this depth of how you brought this up or anything. That's what I love about these shows, is like digging into like, how did this actually come to be? You know?
Yeah. I got space to roam. I got space to tell the whole story.
Yeah, that's sure. Good. That's good.
Yeah, well, I appreciate bringing me on too, man. I appreciate bringing me on. Like I said, I'm gonna have some friends who have some good app ideas, and I'm gonna send them your way, man. I'm definitely send them your way. And so yeah, I really enjoyed the conversation, man.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Daryl. Appreciate coming on the show, man. So, so that's going to be a wrap for everyone. So check out the Bass Parlor app. Like we said, the link will be in the show notes. You can download it from the Apple or Google Play stores. Bass Parlor, my friends, Daryl Stevens, check it out. If you're into music, even if you're not in the Atlanta area, if you're in, you know, anywhere, like this is a global thing. So that's the beauty of applications software.
Absolutely.
So, all right, man. Well, that's it. Well, that's all we're going to do. So again, like, rate, subscribe. Vote, upvote, whatever the heck you got to do for the show. Really appreciate it, as long as you got some value out of this, and share it with someone if you did as well. All right, everyone. I'll see you in the next episode. Dan Hafner signing off. See you later.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it.